Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Hey, it's Charles Freericks, author of My Imaginary Friend Was Too Cool to Hang Out With Me, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Wondery Sunset Studio in West Hollywood, California. I am so glad you guys tuned in today. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, today's story is unique. It is brought to us from Charles Freericks. Now, Charles is an author and a published poet, and he's also a television executive. Do you know what I mean? A television executive. I think what that means is he's a suit. Do you know what I mean, Sergio? He wears suits, I believe. Anyway, it's pretty interesting. The title of his story is Stalker. And I'll tell you, it's a twist on the stalker story that you might be thinking of. I mean, you're going to find out in a second here. But, you know, a lot of times when you think of stalkers, you think about a boyfriend stalking a girlfriend or, like a crazed fan stalking a celebrity. But this is different. This one involves a car. This one takes place in Santa Monica. And what really struck me about this story is not just the story, but the way Charles tells it. And I know those streets in Santa Monica very well, the streets that he talks about. They're very pedestrian. They're very, you know, it's very like, you know, all American USA, little town, as it were. It's supposed to be. Santa Monica has really strict laws and strict zoning laws for that matter. But this is an amazing story. So you guys are going to love it. Now, before we bring Charles on, I did want to mention that if you'd like to support Storyworthy, that's simple. You know that. You can go over to our website, storyworthypodcast.com, click on our Amazon ad. That helps right there. And then why not follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Storyworthy? And here's something you can do. This is simple. Just tell a friend. It's just like that. You say, hey, you know what I was listening to today? Storyworthy. Yeah, it's great. It's fun. It's quick, true stories, people I know. Fabulous. You got to check it out, storyworthypodcast.com. All right, you guys, I'm going to tell you about our new sponsor, HelloFresh. HelloFresh makes it easier, tastier, and healthier than ever to enjoy the experience of cooking new recipes and eating together at home. You won't believe how much food you get. Now, recently, I got enough food to make some amazing meals like honey and orange chicken jambalaya with tomato rice. Like, how could I put that together? And I know I'm cooking well because my daughter yells out, "Did you really cook this, Mommy?" And if she says that, then you know something is going on. I also cook Thai pork meatballs. It comes with fresh noodles and green beans. I mean, I never, ever could cook Thai food on my own. And there are recipe cards with pictures. I love the pictures. So whether you're a great cook, an average cook, or you're like me and you're not a cook at all, you have to take a look at HelloFresh. Head over to HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code STORY, and you're going to get $35 off your very first order. You're welcome. All right, you guys, he's here right now, Charles Freericks. He is the author of My Imaginary Friend Is Too Cool to Hang Out With Me. And you can find Charles on Twitter at Charles Freerick and on his blog, cjofnj.blogspot.com. I gotta say that again for you guys. cjofnj. cjofnj.blogspot.com. And there, Charles posts a lot of cool pictures of his passion, which is trains. Yeah, you heard me. He's a train guy. Very, very cool blog. All right, without further ado, guys, Charles Freericks.
I was down 35 pounds, just 5 pounds away from what I had hoped would be my new normal. I've been working out and eating smart for over 6 months, losing no more than 2 pounds a week, which is the rate that they say is sticky. I was proud of the new me. Because I was a studio exec, I wasn't expected at work until 10:30, which gave me plenty of time for a morning workout. I've been mixing it up with bike rides along the beach and speed walks through Venice. But a cold and rainy January had forced me to work out in front of the Sony Wega. I had a couple brand new DVDs that allowed me to switch it up each morning between walking my way slim and crunch fat-burning Pilates. I was about to have another morning session with the incredibly slim fat-burning Pilates ladies when my wife returned from dropping our daughter at kindergarten and said, "It's so beautiful out. You should go out inside instead of standing in front of the TV again." Had I not listened to her none of what I'm about to tell you would have happened. Had I not listened to her, my life would have continued on its path of fitness and a false sense of security. But I did listen, and I put on a pair of sneakers and I headed out the door for a quick-paced walk along 4th Street to Electric Avenue and back. The course was a short 3-mile circuit from our house, but included a steep grade up 4th on the return that made me actually feel like I'd accomplished something. I would take it as fast as I could, feeling the burn in the back of my legs and my heart racing to supply blood to my muscles. I actually felt my heart getting stronger with each climb. At the top of the grade sat the house from the opening credits of Three's Company. Further down the street was the Growing Place, an early childhood center in the old Washington Elementary School building. I was somewhere between the Three's Company house and the Growing Place when the trajectory of my new life as a skinny man changed. A brand new 2004 Jaguar X-Type ripped down 4th Street at what must have been 50 miles an hour. There were 3-year-olds feet away. This was a street my own 5-year-old and 7-year-old walked on. This was my neighborhood, and I was responsible for keeping it safe. I was a little out of breath from climbing the grade, but was still able to work up a really irritated face and strong head shake at the passing little fake Jaguar. The driver, a ginger yuppie with pasty white skin and a way too big forehead, stared back at me as he passed. I wish I'd done more, screamed, given him the finger, hocked a loogie on his windshield, but it was too late. He and his ersatz Jaguar were gone. Now, you may be wondering why I called it a fake Jaguar. Well, the Jaguar X-Type was a brief mistake from the early 2000s, wanting to compete with BMW, but with no existing platform to build a smaller car on, Jaguar turned to its then corporate parent Ford to provide them with that platform. The end result, one might say, was Jaguar's Edsel, New Coke, or Netflix Quickster. Built on the same platform as the Ford Contour, a car I'm guessing even most car aficionados no longer remember, but which can best be described as a Ford Taurus that had been left in the dryer too long. The Jaguar X-Type was nothing more than a tarted up, emaciated Taurus with a Jaguar grill and headlight treatment, sort of like when someone puts a Mercedes hood ornament on their Dodge Neon. But back on that day I'm describing, it was still a brand new Jaguar, priced the same as a BMW or a Mercedes, and certainly worthy of purchase by an upcoming yuppie in a men's warehouse sports coat and tie. And it's in that perceived automotive entitlement that my bad situation spun into what I would call a terrible one. You see, as I neared the next block, the Jaguar X-Type in question roared back up 4th, up the grade, tore past me, and pulled to a stop at the cross street that I was approaching. The driver's side window came down halfway, and the ginger yuppie yelled out, "Do you have a problem?" The correct answer to his question would have been, "Actually, sir, this is a residential street and with a preschool on the corner, and it's really not safe for the kids when folks exceed the speed limit." The answer probably would have gotten me cursed out. It may have resulted in a spit out, "I'll drive how I want." It doubtless would have resulted in my not ever seeing the ginger yuppie with the fake Jaguar again. But I'll never know because I didn't do that. No, I figured I was fit. I just climbed the grade, and I was dealing with an asshole who needed to be put in his place. I decided that what I should do was insult him. "You're driving a Ford," I began. "Huh?" he responded. "Your car. It's a Ford Detour with a Jaguar grill pasted on," I continued, as I briskly walked past him and back up the sidewalk towards home. As I neared the next block, the little fake Jaguar pulled up at the cross street. It was then that for the first time since I'd started working out and losing weight, that the reality that while I may have been in much better physical shape than I had been 6 months earlier, I was also not as strong as I had been when I was huskier, came to me. Yes, I had more muscle tone on my arms, but I didn't have that extra 35 pounds behind them anymore. I was weak. While I was thinking about this ironic and inopportune truism, the ginger yuppie got out of his car and waited for me on the lawn of an apartment building. It was then that I realized that he probably did not get his sports coat at Men's Warehouse, but rather Rochester Big and Tall. He was a minimum of 6'7" tall, and while not overweight, was solid. He was smiling, while I, like an idiot, continued to walk towards him. I found his smile oddly comforting, as if he was waiting for me to say, "You got me on the Jag. It's really a Ford. Good one." Unfortunately, as it turned out, he was in point of fact smiling that big, beautiful grin because he was simply a fucking psychotic. I thought I might just walk past him, but he got right in front of me. Being 6'2" and a half myself, I understand that physical size can be very intimidating. I just wasn't used to being the one intimidated. I actually tried to keep walking, brushing him aside. "You think you're funny?" he said as he shoved me back.
It wasn't an overly aggressive shove, but it also confirmed my sense that he was a great deal stronger than I was, and if this was going to turn into a physical battle, the best I could hope for was to limit the amount of ribs I had broken. All of the things that I thought made me win in the situation, the fact that I owned a better car, the fact that I was a studio executive, the fact that this was my hood, the fact that I was not an idiot who would chase someone down for shaking their head at me didn't matter. None of that made a difference. So I decided my best bet was to apologize with a slightly toadishy grovel. It was frankly the only arrow in my quiver. Before I could verbally prostrate myself, however, I got shoved again. I stood my ground so that I wouldn't give him the pleasure of knowing that I was petrified by his amazing shoving skills. "You have a problem?" he asked. "No," I answered, a hell of a lot less cocksure than I had been when he was still in his car. "There are a lot of crazies out there," he went on. "I'm one of them, but there are people even crazier than me. One of those guys is going to kill you. Maybe it'll be me. So let me ask, do you want to apologize?" I didn't feel it prudent to point out that he was actually contradicting himself within his own threat. "Yes, I apologize," I said. While my insides churned, I took solace in the fact that I knew I was lying. It was admittedly not much, but frankly, I live off crumbs. Unfortunately, the apology wasn't sufficient for the supersized howdy-doody. For the next hour or 2.5 minutes, I'm not certain, I stood there wondering if I was about to die because I'd gotten fit. Meanwhile, he prattled on about the insane people in the world and how lucky I was that I'd run across him, who was frankly only slightly insane. He made me apologize another 5 times, each time chipping away another piece of my soul. I had no idea if I was going to get the hell beaten out of me or if I was going to be beaten to death until he finally relaxed his shoulders and sighed, as if he felt he had made his point. Then he shoved me one last time and walked back to his car. Now, the entire thing would probably have been over then. But I was angry and shamed at the same time, or what is known as the cocktail of stupid blunder still to come. And sure enough, I made one. As he walked back to his car, I followed to get a good look at his license plate number. He saw this and for the first time looked concerned, worried, and even alarmed that maybe he was the one who had made the mistake. "I will find out where you live and kill you in front of your family," he said, smiling. I walked away with no intention of returning home. I was less than a mile from the Santa Monica police, so I just kept going up 4th Street towards them. I was going to report him to get my revenge. As I crossed Ocean Park, the fake Jaguar suddenly appeared, heading south down 4th Street again. When it reached me, the evil Conan O'Brien slowed, rolled down the passenger side window, and pointed a gun at me. It was a big gun, like Dirty Harry always had. I didn't duck. I didn't run. I stared at him. I don't know why I didn't run. Everything I know about me told me that I would have ducked, run, cried, done something defensive when put in that situation, but I didn't. I'd seen the same thing in movies where a gun gets pointed at someone and they just stand there and stare back, and I hadn't ever believed those scenes before, but now I knew they were true. In that second or two of the gun pointing at my forehead, I also had the thought, what a shame it was that I had worked so hard to get in shape and yet I was going to die here right now. But just as I accepted my death, the ginger yuppie pulled the gun back into his car and sped away, causing his little Ford engine to roar like a bobcat or lynx. I was 3/4 of a mile from the police station. My breathing was shallow. I could barely get enough oxygen to walk, let alone to walk fast. Every car that passed, I assumed, was going to be the fake Jaguar. 3/4 of a mile never seemed so far. It was as if I was trying to climb Everest with a piano on my back. The blocks in front of me telescoped, never ending. After the longest 5 minutes I ever experienced, I reached the police station. The front entrance had a pair of heavy glass doors that I probably would have given second thought to on most days, but which nearly caused me to faint on this one as it took every ounce of strength I had inside me to get one open just enough to squeeze my new svelte self through. I stumbled to the front desk where the desk sergeant looked up and asked, "Can I help you?" I couldn't talk. No words came out of my mouth. It was like those nightmares where a bad guy is chasing you and you try to get help, but when you find that person, no words come out of your mouth. I kept making it even worse, I later realized, because I was trying to speak without taking a breath, and there really was no air to cause my larynx to vibrate. "Take a breath," the desk sergeant advised. I'm not certain if I took his said advice or not, but somehow I got out. A guy was speeding and didn't like me saying no and pulled a gun on me. I realized how stupid that sounded and calmed myself as much as I could. I said enough that the desk sergeant understood what had happened. He told me to wait for the detective on duty. Now, the waiting area of the Santa Monica police station is a room with huge glass windows looking out on 4th Street. I kept an eye out for the fake Jaguar.
I steadied my breathing and tried to recount exactly what had happened in my mind so that I could explain it to the detective. Let's see. I saw a man speeding on a residential street, and I shook my head at him. He turned around and drove back to confront me. I called his Jaguar a Ford. He turned around and drove back, got out of his car, and threatened me. I looked at his license plate. He turned around and drove back and aimed a .44 Magnum at me. What exactly is it I think he'll do if I file a police report on him? I went up to the desk sergeant and said I wasn't going to make a report. I said I was sorry for wasting his time. He responded, he's going to do this to someone else if you don't file a complaint. These kind of guys always do. Maybe one day he'll kill someone who doesn't like him speeding. I'm really sorry, but I don't want to be that person, I said. I don't know if that makes me a bad human being, but it was honest. Sometimes in life we're presented with tough calls, and the truth of the matter is we have to make them based upon the information we have at the time. Maybe I was wrong, I'll never know. I made the call the way my gut and brain told me to. When I got to work later that day, I had a meeting with one of my favorite comics, Rick Overton, and I told him what had happened. You filed a police report, right? He asked. No, I responded, citing the escalation litany. Rick thought about it for a moment and then nodded in agreement before saying what had to be one of the most insightful things I'd heard in a long time. A guy like that is a placeholder for a chalk outline. It's just a matter of time. A couple of months later, I had some meetings coming up in Detroit. I was still shaken. Hell, I was the guy who actually called the number on that employee assistance program card we all forget we have. I told the operator that I needed help. She sent me to a shrink who I told the whole story. Why was this so upsetting to you? He asked. I don't want to die, I responded. Why not? I don't want to not exist. I don't want to die. We're all going to die, he counseled. They say there are no coincidences in life, but that's not true. While I was waiting at LAX for my Detroit flight, I passed an extremely tall man in the men's room. He was standing by the paper towel dispenser. He was talking to someone and didn't notice me, but I recognized his smile. It was my friend, the ginger yuppie. Unlike our previous meeting, however, here we were surrounded by people, and here I knew he didn't have a gun. We were past the TSA screening. He hadn't seen me. I scrambled to the toilet side where I could hide. I thought about confronting him. He couldn't follow me home here. He wouldn't even know who I was. I thought I could tell his traveling mate what he had done. Maybe it was his boss. Maybe it was his future father-in-law. I thought about how I would finally shame him for what he had done to me, and then I ducked into a stall and cowered until enough time had passed that I was sure he had left.
I love the twist at the end, right? Like when he sees that guy in the airport. That is so flippin' creepy. So creepy. And by the way, I think that the term ginger, that might be racist. I'm just saying, Charles. I don't know. I think it might be. But the story is a couple years old. I get it. Anyway. All right, you guys, we're going to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank our storyteller once again, Charles Freericks. You can find him again on Twitter at Charles Free Rick. And why not tweet Charles and let him know how much you enjoyed his story on Storyworthy. And you can follow us over there as well at Storyworthy. And remember to check out storyworthypodcast.com. And here's one more thing. If you're really in a good mood, you really want to help me out, you say, I like that girl, Christine Blackburn. I like that show, Storyworthy. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to head over to iTunes. I'm going to punch in Storyworthy. It's going to come up. Or if I have an iPhone, I'll just hit the podcast app. It's right there. It's already on your phone. And you leave us a good review. That's what you do. And why not check out past episodes of Storyworthy as well with my dear friend, Hannes Finney. And join us next week on Storyworthy for a story by comedian Erica Rhodes.
My costume was a tiny, tiny, microscopic gold sequins dress. I picked it up and said, this is it?
That's next week on Storyworthy. I want to thank everybody here over at Wondery today, including our sound engineer, Sergio Enriquez. Thank you, Sergio. And on behalf of our storyteller, once again, Charles Freericks, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a Storyworthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.